So one of the things that I think we have to walk away from facing the exit from COVID is the thing of a typical student. There is no average anymore. That distribution has just blown up.
Welcome to Office Hours, where we follow up on the most frequently asked questions from Policy Ed videos. I'm Tom Church, a policy fellow at the Hoover Institution, and today I'm talking to Mackie Raymond about the effect that the coronavirus pandemic has had on student learning gains. Mackie is a distinguished research fellow at the Hoover Institution, where she directs the Center for Research on Education Outcomes, also called CREDO. Mackie, will you give us an idea of how you actually measure learning loss and summer slide? What is it that you guys did with this report? How many states? How does this all work? This is quite a lot of data to figure this stuff out.
So we already partnered with 33 states across the country. And as a result of those partnerships, we have access to individual information on students every year, going back for many years. Using those data, we know what students scored on spring standardized performance assessments. And we know a lot about the student themselves and where they went to school. Using those data, we partnered with 20 of our 33 states to simulate what students would have learned if COVID had not happened. So we were pretending that the spring 2020 assessments actually happened, even though they've been canceled. Using those estimates, we were able to then make an estimate of what the actual loss of learning was because school buildings were closed in the middle of March. And so how much did students forego of learning between the middle of March and the end of the school year? And the answer to that was that there were substantial losses everywhere we looked, and that around those substantial losses, there was huge variation in larger and smaller losses that were highly correlated and associated with both socioeconomic status and attending a historically underserved school that had high concentrations of low income or high concentrations of minority students. So at the end of last year, we found that kids were facing the 2020-21 school year with a much broader range of learning at the end of the year than they normally would in a typical year.
So do you have a best guess as to how much learning loss will have occurred by this coming fall for the average student? What are the data look like? What's the distribution going to look like? Is it pretty concentrated? I mean, what's the best case, worst case scenario that we're looking at here?
So one of the things that I think we have to walk away from facing the exit from COVID is the thing of a typical student. There is no average anymore. That distribution has just blown up. And what we have are schools and students with resources that have been able to continue gaining knowledge this year. And whether that's because families augment or because schools have put a tremendous amount of effort and resources into keeping learning moving forward in a hybrid model, in a completely online model, or in an in-person model, those students are going to have minimal impact this year in addition to what they lost last year. But at the other end of the spectrum, you have students that we hear about in many of the media reports where teachers are fighting about whether they're in school at all, where the amount of instruction that students get, regardless of where they sit, is minimal, 2-3 hours of instruction a day instead of the usual 6. And we have places where even now, a full year into the pandemic, students don't have the resources to learn where they are. Either there are no good resources in the classroom or there's no good resources for online learning. And so the typical student has gone away. And what we have now is this huge, broad spread of where kids are going to come back in the fall of 2021.
So in your report and in the Policy Ed video, you mentioned new approaches to classroom-based instruction in response to what's happened with school shutdowns. What do those look like? Can you give us some ideas that people have put out there and what might be working? I mean, are people stopping them from being adopted?
Well, there's a lot in the questions that you've just asked. So let's try to take them one at a time. So We have had for decades a model of one teacher and some dozen or plus students. And the expectation was that the students would show up in the classroom roughly in the same place, ready to learn, and that the teacher could basically deliver one narrow range of instruction and it would hit the students where they were ready to learn. We cannot expect that. And so one of a number of different things needs to happen. We need to either figure out which students need which levels of support and group the level of support to what children need, where they need to start, how quickly they can learn, how much of a deficit they have in the material that they didn't master the last time they were in a classroom situation. At the other end, we have the possibility that you could mix all kinds of different education resources in the classroom so that the teacher could, in fact, teach what they call differentially. They could teach one part of the day to really low performing and one part of the day to middle performing and one part of the day to high performing, but that students would be supported with additional resources. Now, those resources could be volunteers that come into the school that are able to help students in whatever level of learning they are. It could be online classes, online exercises. It could be online resource materials that they can reference. Or it could be that students sign up for a complete course digitally that the teacher basically oversees and serves as a coach and a problem resolver. And we have had positive experiences with all three of these kinds of approaches to classroom-based instruction. The challenge here is the scale at which we need to do that in the coming years.
So estimates of learning loss come from standardized tests, I believe, but many people are skeptical of standardized tests and their ability to accurately measure learning gains. So are there other kinds of assessments that are helpful, or is that what we're stuck with?
So it's a wonderful question, and it's super timely because this is a very hot topic right au courant at the moment. Why are we even thinking about standardized tests in the first place? It's because as policy planners, state education leaders need to have a wide angle view of what the situation is. And standardized assessments for whatever their shortcomings, and we'll talk about those in a moment, they do in fact provide a wide angle view. When we're talking about assessments for that purpose, you want to have a test that is reliable and valid to the content that it tests for. You want to have it be available and taken by almost all the students so that you have a very representative picture of what's going on. And frankly, it has to be administratively manageable and fiscally manageable. So we're talking about trying to thread four different needles at once in order to get a picture of what kids know. Now, a lot of people think standardized tests don't test what kids know. And it is certainly the case that no standardized test will ever test everything that every student knows. But the tests are in fact aligned with what the state boards of education have said students need to learn at every grade. And so they are aligned to what we have as a society said we want kids to know. And while it may not be a complete picture, it is certainly an accurate picture of what it tests. Having said that, all kinds of people don't like tests. Some people don't like tests because they think it stresses out the students. Other people don't like tests because they think it takes away from instructional time in the classroom. The teachers are spending a lot of time prepping their students to take tests. The evidence on that is actually pretty mixed. That's not a common practice, but it is a very common complaint. Third, people say it doesn't actually reflect the whole totality of learning. No, but there are other things you could do for that. The question is, what is an alternative that we can think of that we can get online quick, not online, but get up and running quickly that would provide the same level of accuracy and the same breadth of penetration? The alternative that people are talking about now is allowing teachers to figure out their own assessments, or allowing individual schools or districts to pick whatever assessments they want. I can't imagine sitting in a state capitol in an education agency and trying to make sense out of, for example, in California, there are 1,000 districts. There would be 1,000 different systems of measuring at a minimum. I would just want to quit my job. So no, we need something more sustainable and more reliable than that. And so for whatever their shortcomings, the U.S. Department of Education is continuing to say, we have to have a picture. We need the snapshot for planning. We have to know what kids know.
How long do you think it will take to get education and academic achievement back on track once schools, all schools, safely reopen?
Some people will say that we will never get back on track. My team is currently studying how long we think that will take, but our best front end estimates at this point is that we are talking years, not months. And in some cases, we are facing a lifelong obligation to help students who are so far behind that even by the time they finish 12 years of primary and secondary education, they will still be behind. So this is a long haul proposition, and policymakers are wrestling with what to do now. And eventually they're going to have to wrestle with what do we do with the students that we could not bring fully back.
As a follow-up, how likely do you think it is that some districts might implement more summer school or even just more schooling in order to catch up?
So the question isn't whether they're just delivering more units of schooling, really. It's whether or not the units of schooling that they provide are tailored to the needs of the students that they're serving. So I'm a great advocate of extra learning time, whether it's summer school or whether it's really fun math camps, if there is such a thing, or additional tutoring or whatever. What I would like those to do is to be very sensitive to the fact that they're going to have to meet a very, very wide range of student needs, and they're going to have to be at it for a really long time. A single session of summer school is just not going to cut it.
So the news is full of stories of districts that are facing challenges getting schools up and running again. What are options for families in those situations?
Well, that's a great question, because many families have had long-term preferences for going to district schools. And now if they are finding schools full of barriers to access or resistance on the part of educators and adults, they're finding interest in other forms of education. Families that have means will always be able to find alternatives. And whether that's paying for private education, whether it's creating pods of similar families, whether it's embarking on enriched homeschooling for those kids, those are options when you have the means to do so. There are in many states other programs that are aimed at families that don't have those means. And one of them is performing particularly interestingly this year. They're called education savings accounts. And what they do is they monetize the amount of money a student would normally cost a district and allow a family to select a bundle of education services, whether that's a part-time in a school and part-time at home, whether it's enrolling in an online school and enriching that with all kinds of additional resources and supports. But they're finding that putting the decision-making power into the hands of parents is something that is politically feasible now at a time that it hasn't been in the past, and that they're finding a lot of parents aren't highly interested in it.
That was Mackie Raymond answering your questions about the coronavirus pandemic and the effect it has had on student learning gains. If you have any more questions, make sure to leave them in the comments below.